Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to On the Line with CWLA, where we speak for America's children. Good afternoon. I'm your host, Tony Regusters. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to have a thought-provoking discussion about one of many critical issues and concerns about children in foster care, multiple placements. Some children and adolescents in foster care have suffered a variety of traumatic childhood experiences. While in foster care, a significant number of children experience what we call multiple placements, that is, moving from home to home. As you might imagine, the revolving door of different homes can be detrimental to the healthy growth and development of children in foster care, characterized by such harmful outcomes as a difficulty forming healthy attachments to others, a loss of connections with family and community of origin, the inability to trust, low self-esteem, gaps in education, a lack of continuity in health care, and the list goes on. Before we get started, I'd like to share a word of instruction for our listeners. We welcome your questions and concerns and comments. If you have a question or a comment, the number to call is 347-326-9411. That's 347-326-9411. When I go to the phone lines to take a question or a comment, you'll know when your particular call is on the line when I say your area code and telephone number. For those of you who call in just to listen, if I come to your line, if you don't have a question or a comment, please just let me know that you're only listening so that I can quickly move on to the next caller. If you are a member of a child welfare agency, please let us know the name of the organization that you're with. Currently, there are more than 500,000 children and youth in our nation's foster care system. A growing concern today focuses on the negative outcomes for some children who grow up in foster care. A major study is now being conducted to produce concrete evidence that will lead to improvements in the way services for foster children are structured and designed. Joining us on the line this afternoon is Dr. David Rubin, a previous guest on this program in April of 2008. Dr. Rubin is an impassioned advocate for child safety and a champion of placement stability for children in foster care. He's a pediatrician and director of research and policy at Safe Place, the Center for Child Protection and Health at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He has devoted much of his medical career to research that focuses on the positive growth and development of children. He is particularly concerned with the physical and emotional growth and development of children in foster care. In order to better understand and increase awareness about the long-term repercussions of frequent placements, Dr. Rubin is conducting our nation's first longitudinal study of children in foster care, focused on continual research and observations over a long period of time to gather detailed information on foster children at every change of placement. I would also like to introduce and welcome Misty Stensley. Misty is one of 12 million adults in this country who grew up in foster care. While in the system, Misty experienced life in 30 different foster homes, treatment centers in 8 states, had bouts of trouble with the law, experienced physical abuse, and the ever-present feeling that she just didn't belong. Somehow, Misty was able to overcome the enormous odds. Now in her 30s, Misty is a clinical social worker and the deputy director at Foster Care Alumni of America, a national nonprofit association founded and managed by alumni of the foster care system and located in Alexandria, Virginia. She is also a licensed foster parent who has raised 3 foster children. Dr. Rubin, Misty, we're pleased to welcome you both to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. And Misty, you've got what has got to be some kind of record for living in different foster homes.
You know, I don't think it is. I've talked to a number of people who had even more placements than I did. And I do want to be clear that that lots of them were foster homes, but also many, many institutions and shelter facilities and treatment centers.
Wow. Well, we're going to get right to the root of the issue today. Dr. Rubin, we want to begin our question and discussion with you. Define for us, would you, placement instability or what you would consider to be a reasonable number of moves, if any, would be?
Well, you know, I think first I'd start out by saying the issue is not simple. Certainly it changes by the age of children, and there's no sort of easy way to say this is the exact right thing for this child, because sometimes moves will be planned if there's good teaming going on that may result in some instability for children. But in general, I think when I came at this from a research perspective and thinking about advocacy within working with the child welfare system, you know, I noticed that, you know, when you go back and you look at child welfare research, the sum total of a child's experience was summed up by the number of placements that they had. And that certainly is one aspect of thinking about placement stability for children. But I, from a developmental standpoint, when you think about attachment theory, I sort of see a child's removal from home and placement into out-of-home care as this sort of critical window to provide stability and permanency to children, and the sooner you can provide that stability to a child, the better the child's going to do. And so therefore, led by others, including Sigrid James in San Diego, who was thinking along the same lines, we have adopted a way of thinking about placement stability when we're looking at outcomes for children in aggregate from the child welfare system that asks not how many placements they were in, but how quickly it took to get that child in a placement setting that stuck. So therefore, we permitted, and I think when I speak to a lot of child welfare, social workers, et cetera, there is an understanding that sometimes you need to move the child around a couple times in the first month to find the right placement. But good practice would mean that even if you needed to move the child once or twice in the beginning, that you found the right placement for that child within a month, 1 to 2 months for that child, you were doing pretty good. And so the placement stability algorithm we use is to say, well, if you achieved a long-lasting placement within the first 45 days of placement, that's really good. But then there's a bunch of kids that, you know, you also achieve stability on and a long-lasting placement. It may take a little bit longer, a couple months, but once you get them settled after a couple months, they're really going to stay there for a long time. And then there's a third group, and sometimes people break it up a little bit more, but in general I think of a third group, which is children who are unstable, who really can never stick for more than a couple months or a few months at a time. And if you look at an observation period of 18 months to 2 years, there's never a period of time for which they're in the same place for more than 6 months. So I started to try to change the language of the way people think about placement stability, because as they start to think about monitoring their own systems, it's not good enough just to say, well, how many recorded placements do we have on the child, because I'm not sure that really helps a social worker on the ground.
Dr. Rubin, you're now conducting a study on frequent placements. When did the study begin? How long will it be in effect?
Well, we started the study in November of 2006 in partnership with our local child welfare department here in Philadelphia, the Department of Human Services. And it was we were enrolling children over about 2 years. We're mostly looking at younger children, children between 3 and 8 years of age, for this study. And we enrolled about 450 children. We've been tracking for DHS, and we'll be tracking them for up to 18 months to 2 years. So in its entirety, considering that children are kind of coming in over time, it's about a 3 to 4 year study, looking at a range of outcomes across placements.
And then what would be the outcome in terms of the results of the study? What do you and other professionals in child welfare hope to glean from this study, and what kind of actions will be taken?
Yeah, that's a good question. As you introduced me, you said, you mentioned, is this the first longitudinal study that's ever been done? No, certainly there have been other longitudinal studies that have been performed on children in the child welfare system. I think what makes this study different is two things. The first being that in contrast to most research studies, which kind of occur in their own vacuum outside the context of the workers, we actually designed this study to provide interim analysis and recommendations to local leadership and also nationally around issues we were identifying with respect to how the system was measuring placement stability, the ability to provide good surveillance on children, what procedures were in place to prevent placement disruptions for children or promote successful reunifications or exits to kin. So there's been very much a policy piece built into this, not just a simple let's wait 3 years and find out how the kids were doing. So we expected to try to push the system as we were doing the study. The second thing is that we're actually doing what you did say, which is correct, which is we're the first study that really is trying to get out to the homes of these children every time they move. And we actually developed contacts with 30 agencies within Philadelphia and have been measuring contacting liaisons at those agencies every week for information on the children, so we can ensure that we're capturing all the moves on children, which I know that a lot of child welfare systems have a very difficult time doing. They easily capture when a child transfers between agencies, but often miss the multiple moves that children are having while they're in the agency. Now, with respect to outcomes, I think that early on we've identified a couple of things, and we've identified number one that in general, and I don't think it's just local, I think this is a national problem, I don't think people measure placement stability very well on children. A lot of things are very much niched out, where you'll measure sort of some moves of children who are in foster and kinship care, but if they step up to treatment-level care or residential care, that goes to another division who's looking at those placements. So it's uncertain to me how often people really kind of look at the entire picture of the child in continuity from a quality improvement standpoint to think about stability across a child's entire experience and not just what were they doing when they were in unrestricted placements and what they were doing in treatment placements. Number two is that we're, as with most child welfare systems, you're dealing with very antiquated systems where the quality improvement process is often done retrospectively, where people look back a year or two to see how they've done along a number of performance measures that may be related to the CFSRs. And that's not very helpful to social workers who are trying to help a child now. And so improving the quality of the surveillance and data systems, and some places have had some success there where the social workers actually can get a very accurate picture of what's happening across a number of different systems with regards to stability, whether these children are in the same school, how often they've been changing placements, whether they've had a successful placement, et cetera, needs to be at their fingertips better, particularly in systems where you have a lot of different provider agencies that are basically subcontracting with the Central Department of Human Services. So we've been working actively as we've been performing this study to try to partner with the child welfare system to think about novel solutions that will enhance the ability for social workers across the system to provide good casework for the kids.
Dr. Rubin, this is very important and excellent work that you and your colleagues are undertaking now. I want to ask Misty Stensley, who, again, is one of 12 million adults in our country who grew up in foster care. And Misty grew up and living in more than 30 different foster homes, treatment centers in 8 states, and so forth. Now, proudly to say, she's overcome these odds. She's in her 30s as a clinical social worker and the deputy director at Foster Care Alumni of America. That's really excellent, Misty. Tell us a little bit about your perspective on the benefits of the study that Dr. Rubin and his colleagues are conducting. What, from your personal perspective, would you like to share with us about the necessity of such an important study?
Oh, thank you. I'm a huge fan of Dr. Rubin's and of the work that he does and that his organization does. What I like the most is that we're looking at pushing folks as we go, that we're doing the analysis and developing recommendations on the spot for particular young people, that's been, studies within the foster care and child welfare systems have been too little, too few anyway, but the young people who are typically enrolled as subjects in those studies don't benefit from what we're learning. And so I really appreciate this move to fixing it right now for this kid, because there is such an urgency, and that's something that I and the other folks who have been in foster care know in a different way than regular social workers and other professionals, is just how long a day in foster care can be, how long a life of growing up with no family can be.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about some of your experiences, Misty. You don't have to go too deep, but certainly your life experiences have impacted your whole worldview because you're now in the child welfare system working as a professional.
Right. And, you know, one of the big reasons that I went into social work is because the honorable people, the people I looked up to when I was a child, were a lot of those helping professionals, the social workers and judges and doctors and the people that I came into contact with all the time. But over my years, I spent about 12 total years in the system. So I was reunified and then back in the system and in and out a number of times. And over those years, there were probably a couple of hundred people who were in some way responsible for me. So all of those staff at the group homes and the correctional centers, the therapists, the social workers, the judges, all of these different people who had responsibility for me, yet who didn't have love for me, who didn't really, really know me. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest hindrance of having so many placements was never learning how to be part of a family, never learning how to be part of a community, because it was changing every single day. And developmentally, children just don't have the ability to understand what all those changes mean. And we don't do a great job in the system of letting children know why decisions are being made and what's going to happen next. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So this parade of people that you and homes that you found yourself being transferred to back and forth and institutions, did you ever find that overwhelming to yourself personally, psychologically? Understand that you had some occasions, little dust-ups with the law and different kinds of things like that.
Yes.
Which we all, when you're growing up, you're an adolescent, these things happen. But looking back on that now, and you are, a person, obviously, who's been completely blessed with your own experience, but also because of the people that have helped you, was that overwhelming, that experience? Did you find yourself at times to be completely overwhelmed with the tsunami of home-to-home placement changes?
That's a great description of it, a tsunami. I was overwhelmed, and I spent years in a row of being nothing but overwhelmed, and that mm-hmm. became so much my normal that I didn't even know that it was unusual to feel so desperate, so confused, so afraid, so disconnected, and so different from everybody else.
Dr. Rubin, the powers that be in Congress, are they going to be presented with the results of the study and your recommendations? And does the study just include children in the Philadelphia area?
Well, this particular study does, but we've also done some work with the National Survey of Child and Adolescent Well-Being, which is a federally mm-hmm. funded study. And I think the question about who's the audience? I mean, I think the answer is that depends. Sometimes it's working locally with your child welfare system to try to improve, not only the ability to track these kids, but then building in a robust quality assurance process similar to the quality service reviews that are being done, I think, which is a very positive thing that's come out of child welfare at a number of places like Utah in recent years. So, so this is part of a longitudinal process locally to help reform the child welfare system, I think, as well. Sometimes it's working at the state level to making sure funding streamings are in place to support prevention programs, which we're starting to develop to help families develop strategies to deal with children with disruptive behaviors, a reason often why children continue to move. And if you could promote the attachment earlier rather than waiting until a child is in residential treatment, perhaps you can prevent a lot of the placement disruptions and removals from home that you actually see begin this cascade. And then finally, you do need to push nationally. Sometimes you need to work with your advocacy groups, as we did earlier this year. We came together with folks like the Center for Law and Social Policy and a number of other organizations in Washington, D.C., to help them push forward with the Fostering Connections Act and to recognize the value that kin play in terms of providing stability to children in the child welfare system and hopefully reducing the size of the system to a degree that will help foster families better be able to provide for stability of children, because one of the things we've identified, you know, is the crisis in a lot of large cities around the number of available foster care parents. And so foster parents are often being asked to take several children at once, and that makes it very
mm-hmm.
difficult to think in the context of stability and permanency when you're almost, you know, providing small orphanages in unrestricted foster care placement because there are not enough foster parents to go around. So so you have a number of different audiences depending on the intervention and the policy change that you're looking for.
That's an interesting point. Speaking of tsunamis, we've got a computer screen here just bulging with telephone calls, and we're going to take a few calls, see if we've got some folks who want to chime in on the conversation, make a comment, ask a question. When I come to your phone line, I'll say your area code and telephone number. If you're just listening, just let me know that you're listening. I'll move on to the next call. If you want to make a comment, let us know the name of your child welfare agency so that we can do a little free promo for you folks. I'm going to go to line one first, Beverly. That's 816-426-2257. Are you there? You're on the line.
Hi, just listening.
Okay, thank you so much. We're going to go next to line two. And that is area code 703-385-3200. You're on the line. Okay, nobody's there. We're going to go to line five, Bev. Let's go to line five. Okay, and that area code is 518-473-1611. You're on the line. Are you there? 518-473-1611. Go to line 6, 859-402-4030. You're on the line. Are you there?
I'm just listening.
Okay. Well, appreciate you speaking up. Thank you so much. I'm going to go back to our conversation. Maybe we'll go back to the phones a little bit later. Folks are pretty much engaged in listening to this excellent discussion that we're having today with Misty Stensley and Dr. David Rubin talking about multiple placements here on the line with CWLA. And Dr. Rubin, you've done a lot of work as an advocate for child safety. And tell us a little bit about that work, would you?
Well, you know, I think, you know, my background is actually in child maltreatment. I was, you know, a child abuse physician and having done a fellowship at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And so I came
mm-hmm.
into my interest with working with the child welfare system from the perspective of doing child abuse evaluations and realized that not only is there a safety component on that end, but there's a tremendous safety component that we overlook, both particularly on the physician end. By not taking a more active involvement with the child welfare system. And so when you define child safety, you think about sort of safety in the context of, you know, whether you need to remove a child from the home. I've learned to think of safety more broadly, which is you know, providing safe environments in terms of how many children we place into certain foster care settings, in terms of the appropriateness of settings for certain children. And so in terms of our ability to know where a child is on any given day, the kind of concerns that we saw in Florida a couple of years ago, those were real safety
yes.
concerns to me. And so, you know, when you talk about placement stability, you don't often think about safety, but I actually think there's a strong connection between the two.
I have a question that just kind of popped into my head here with regard to the foster care providers. Does the study include any kind of questioning or Q&A of them?
Yeah, it does, actually. We actually interview all our caseworkers because I think one of the things, and you know, what was nice about the study, we actually involved our provider community as we designed the study to understand some of the questions that they would be interested in from the perspective of things they thought might have needed to change in order to provide better placement and casework decisions. And you know, one of the things that, you know, that you see in vogue in a lot of places right now are issues related
mm-hmm.
to performance-based contracts that in many ways have eliminated some disparities about which provider agencies would take certain children, but has created a system in which a provider will get a call and they have an hour to take a child and they're discouraged from refusing to take a child into their agency. Well, that often, from the provider perspective, sets up a situation where they may feel that they need to place a child, you know, like a square peg into a round hole, that they know they don't have a good placement for that child, but they take that child anyway. And they had significant questions as to, even though that this has created a more efficient system in terms of getting children out into the provider agencies quickly, did that all now introduce more placement instability as agencies were unprepared for certain age groups or kids with certain needs, or didn't really have families to meet those children's needs, that they were going to make decisions of poor fit just to accommodate things, quote, for now, and then begin a cascade of placement instability. So we're spending a lot of time asking both families and caseworkers about the issue of how well do you think this placement that you put the child in the beginning was a good fit for this child? You know, how often are we seeing a culturally sensitive fit in terms of making sure that children are in appropriate settings? And so, you know, we haven't yet gotten to the analysis on those things. Like I said, this is a sliding analysis on a year-to-year basis. This year, we're principally focusing on the sort of variation in agencies along the outcome of stability to show that, you know, to try to push the system to think about measuring as part of the performance-based contract, how well agencies are doing on stability. And we'll be examining these FIT questions as well, too. And that's, you know, in addition to a number of other questions about caseworker turnover, about the number of resources that agencies have, resources related to preventing placement disruptions, what the relationship is to the behavioral health community, and trying to really figure out where the levers are going to be for the new interventions that are going to help caseworkers and agencies provide better placement stability for children, because we know that stability is really an intermediate outcome towards permanency. And if permanency is the goal, placement stability is where the focus needs to be at the front end.
And
quick question
absolutely
for
Misty. Yes.
Quick question for you, Misty. As a survivor of more than 30 placements yourself, and someone who grew up to be a professional in child welfare, and who has provided love and care for three foster children, when you look back on your own situation, you look at the children that you've helped as well, how do you think these multiple placements affect children in terms of their educational welfare, in terms of school?
You know, I think it's really clear that it's very detrimental for young people to have disruptions in their education, also in their health care and the other things that all people need. But we know that the children lose a whole bunch of their educational attainment every time they have to switch schools, which happens so often when they're having to switch placements. And it's not just school. What Dr. Rubin is talking about with the quality of the stability and the stability leading to permanency, those things he's talking about really are family privileges, things
yes.
that most people who grow up in families can assume will belong to them. And that is a place to go on the holidays, a teddy bear that's always yours and is always with you, and generations of the same recipe handed down to you, and somebody to help you fill out your federal financial aid forms when you go to college, and someone to
I need somebody to help
aisle.
Me do that now.
and the chance to participate in a meaningful way, ongoing, in your community, whether it's church or karate lessons or after-school activities. And those are the things that really get lost when placements aren't stable. And those are the things that continue to have lasting consequences for those of us who grew up in unstable situations.
I should add too, Misty. I should add too, that we think about, we focus on permanency for children. We define
quickly,
that,
Doc. We're wrapping up.
Oh, you're wrapping up. Yeah, very quickly.
Yeah, finish your thought really quickly.
Yeah, now this is a good one to wrap up on. We focus on permanency, which is great, on adoptions and reunifications. But the reality is, even for many of our adolescents, for example, the permanency that they're looking for is stability itself. They're not looking to be adopted. And so we in general have to move a lot harder towards thinking about stability as a process outcome, because, you know, if we can provide long-term stability for these kids, that's what they're asking for.
And that's the last word. You've been listening to CWLA's On the Line with CWLA. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the program today, Dr. David Rubin and Misty Stensley, talking about multiple placements. We're out of time. It's been a great program. Thank you both for joining us. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen out there in Blog Talk Radio Land, for joining us as well. Please check us out next Wednesday at 2 to 2:30 Eastern Time for another edition of On the Line with CWLA.
Okay.